I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Well, today on the podcast, I am delighted to have Beth Slevkove. And of course, you know, I forgot to ask her ahead of time how to pronounce it, so I hope I said that right. I'll find out in just a second. I could be Slevkove, but I said Slevkove. Anyway, she's written the book Broken Hallelujahs. It's hitting me a little below the belt in the best possible sense of that. The subtitle is Learning to Grieve the Big and Small Losses of Life. And if you don't think you've experienced much loss in your life, you're probably in denial. That's my guess. Or, you know, you probably haven't thought that much about it, but we're going to talk more deeply about it today with Beth. Just a reminder, as you know, my marketing budget is, oh, let me add it up real quickly. That would be $0. And so you're my most favorite marketers. So anytime you share the podcast on your Facebook page, it's a huge help. And I really, really appreciate it. So many of you have been incredibly encouraging in this process. And wow, I think I'm maybe 5-6 months down the road into the podcast realm and thoroughly enjoying it. And you can head to anitalustria.com to check out more about past podcasts. If you've missed them, you can also head to iTunes or Stitcher and do a search on Faith Conversations or on my name, Anita Lustria. Either way, you will find the podcast. You can go back and check out earlier ones. Well, let's dive into the topic today. Beth is a spiritual director, a retreat leader, surfer, and mother, and she has served as the director of spiritual formation for Youth Specialties for 7 years. And that alone to me is really interesting. That organization, when you look back at the legacy of that organization, that's pretty amazing. So pretty cool to have served with them. And she's currently really deeply rooted in her urban Lutheran congregation. And we're going to talk to her more about that too, living in San Diego with her husband and 2 young children. Beth, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Did I pronounce your last name right? Is it Slevkove?
It was perfect. It was Joe's grandfather had it changed in Galveston when he immigrated here. So you've done well.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. And what was it? I should ask, right?
Slivkov, Russian.
Ah, Russian. Yes. Okay. That's right. I read about his heritage a little bit in the book, or the mention of it, certainly. So, well, I'm curious, and curious in this sense, to let other people know, because I'm in the process of reading your book. I'm not quite halfway through. But you don't write a book called Broken Hallelujahs if you've not had, plural, broken hallelujahs in your own life. So my guess and what I've read certainly speaks to the truth that you have lived this and you're even living it even as we speak. So let's talk a little bit about the genesis of this book.
Sure. My background was very idyllic, a wonderful neighborhood, wonderful family, wonderful church community. And so it took me a while to realize that the world was not so wonderful all the time, and that there were things that, you know, eventually I began to be hurt by various things going on. And of course, starting with just friendships hurting me, and then discovering other people I trusted, people in the church were Sunday school teachers and things like this, were having affairs. And, you know, these things kind of came out of the woodwork. And I thought, oh my gosh, I wasn't prepared to handle what life was giving me as I grew more and more and experienced more and more things. And really recognizing at some point, probably in my 20s, that my theology was not holding my life experience as well. And so that sent me in a real crisis of faith. And a lot of kinds of losses started coming to the surface. I mean, loss of kind of this ideal image of what I thought the world was supposed to be, relational losses, even things like leaving home for college, those transitions that are moving towards good things we've loved, good things we've worked hard at, moving toward, you know, getting married, having children, all these very positive transitions also I recognized come with a good deal of loss. There's a lot of letting go. And again, I didn't know what to do with that. I just sort of pretended these things weren't in me, and tried to, sometimes I'd try to just give it to God, right, as the saying goes.
Yeah.
And, that just didn't, it didn't work.
Well, and let me just interject. Yeah. I think that phrase that you said, pretended it didn't exist, I think a whole lot of us do that. I think some of these losses, they smack us in the face and we're not expecting them. Even I'm thinking of, I've got a 23-year-old son who's in a grad school program in South Carolina currently, and, had a tremendous 4-year experience at his undergrad, a great community and all of that. But, and so you move on and you, whether it's from high school to college or whatever, and you sort of expect things to be the same, or, community will develop easily in the next spot because I've always had it where I've been before. Whatever it is, usually those losses are a little shocking to us. And so I think sometimes it is easy to just try and, or to think that they don't exist, or to shove them under the carpet or whatever, because it is a little shocking.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we are, at least I was, well trained in denying or minimizing or ignoring my loss. And I will say that I think particularly women, and probably particularly women in Christian women.
Yeah, preach.
Right?
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're great at minimizing and saying things like, my arthritic knees, why should I be complaining? Using a judgmental word there. Why am I complaining about this when so-and-so, in this other country is struggling, or there's war here, or these, all these refugees. And I mean, there is so much pain in the world. And often I think we use those kind of things to help us not acknowledge and name what is going on in ourselves. And the problem there is that if we don't open that up, there's no ability to have God come and tend to us in those places. And I think that's the only way, as we open those places up to ourselves and to God and to other people, to the right kind of people, that's where our pains and our griefs and our losses and our disappointments can become something that opens us versus hardens us, and that brings more compassion or transformation in some way versus leading us more into addictions or depression, or the various ways we numb ourselves in our society that are.
And how about naming some of those acceptable ways?
Yes, absolutely. The acceptable addictions.
Yeah.
or numbing mechanisms. Television, social media.
Television / Netflix.
Yeah. And there's not to say that there's not a place to take little vacations from our difficulties and our journeys, and have helpful ways to self-soothe or take care of ourselves, that we get to, jump into a novel or a TV show. But I think most of us are aware when those helpful little mini retreats are no longer retreats, but ways of numbing the pain and not dealing with the pain. And so when we turn the devices off, we're right back where we started from.
Right.
So there's lots of things like that we use. I'm big into spider solitaire. That's my favorite.
That's good. Okay. Good to know, huh? Good. I might try that. Thanks.
Don't start.
All right. I think one of the fears that we have, if we do come to the point of acknowledging that there is loss and that we, have losses to grieve, I think one of the fears is that it will never end, that we'll be in that place forever, or that the tears will never stop. I hear that a lot from women. I'm afraid if I start to cry, I'll never stop. And which is often that feeling or that sense on the beginning of starting to address loss in our lives where maybe we never have before. How do you respond to someone who says that?
I have felt that personally, and I, in my work as a spiritual director, that certainly comes up. I don't want, the can of worms kind of thing, right? I don't want to open this grief up because then all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we need to trust the work of the Holy Spirit mm-hmm. in noticing, recognizing, and I would say welcoming what is in us at the moment, naming and acknowledging and welcoming what we find, be it disappointment, be it sadness, be it anger, and trusting that what is there is being is there in the presence of the Holy Spirit. So we're not forcing ourselves to figure out grief. We're not going grief hunting. Mm. We're just, you know, we're just, at least this is what I'm wanting to encourage through my book, is just recognizing what is in us. What are the things that our heart is telling us? What are the things that our body is telling us that we might be denying? And in doing that, I think we are opening to the Holy Spirit that is already deeply present. And so for me, that's a important safety, I guess, emotionally mm-hmm. safe reminder. And also there is certainly a wisdom in journeying with other people. That is a point I can't overemphasize. Finding traveling companions, one person or a 12-step group or a therapist or a spiritual director, friends.
It's really, really huge.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. Because that also becomes a container that helps us if we feel like all this stuff is going to come out. You know, if I know I'm prone to depression, I need a therapist helpful people to journey with me so I don't feel like I'm you know, sinking into this abyss.
Absolutely. Well, and I just want to mention a couple of things. You know, in Broken Hallelujahs, one of the things that I really love, it's broken into three parts, and I want to get to what you do at the end of each chapter here in just a moment, but I wanted to address the part one of the book is what's been lost, and you spend a good amount of time focusing in on that, and that's an important piece of a grief journey, is to acknowledge what it is that's been lost. And I know you're a proponent of journaling. I certainly am as well. I know it's not everyone's thing, but it really can help to, you know, if we don't sit down and verbally process with someone, to sit down and write out some of the griefs of our life. I think that can be a really helpful place, just getting on paper what it is that and where it is that we've experienced loss. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, what is hurting me now? And I think that journaling is a great, great way for some people. For me, it certainly is. You know, some of us are kinesthetic, so we need to be writing or we need mm-hmm. to be walking it out and having these conversations in nature. Or there's all sorts of different ways to get the stuff out that's in us. And again, it's not deciding what I need to grieve. I might have experienced a deep loss, 10 years ago that just isn't, I'm not experiencing that as a loss right now, you know, for whatever reason. And so I don't, you know, I'm not trying to go back and kind of open up things that mm-hmm. aren't me in the present, but to really stay in the present with what is hurting me now. Are there things that I haven't healed from? Are there things that need to be tended to in my heart and in my mind and in my body that I've not allowed to be tended to and be looked at? So yeah, journaling is wonderful. And I did want to place a little bit more of my story for
thank you.
Yes, for your folks, because really the things, the tipping point, I guess, would be for me in terms of accumulation of grief. There was, well, before I hit the tipping point, there was loss of health, and I had to deal with arthritis, and then after marriage, my husband, diabetes diagnosis, and just the changes that those things brought to us, and unexpected in our young bodies. And then all the ups and downs of marriage. I have a chapter there on the love and disillusionment. Mm. And I purposely wanted to write something that was a little bit like an anti-Christian marriage book chapter.
Thank you. It was great.
And I say this, you know, committed to my husband and love my husband and believe that he's, you know, the right person for me, whatever that means, but, and he's a good man. And just to talk about, you know, if you're talking about a lifelong commitment with any human being, you're talking about a heck of a lot of work and energy.
Yeah. Well, and let me quote you. I love this. I underlined this in that chapter. I will say that marriage has been the greatest vehicle of spiritual formation in my life. Yes. It is in marriage that my false self appears, my false belief systems, my desires, needs, dependencies, all the broken stuff inside, the wounded places, the critical voices, the unconscious expectations. There is no hiding, no running back into my private life where I once believed I was a kind, flexible, and nice person. I am discovering that love is not a victory march, as Leonard Cohen sings. And you go on to say, in marriage, I'm trying to choose vulnerability, even though it will lead to a broken heart from time to time.
Yeah. I could read that.
But leaning into that and living into that it's where the greatest reward, I don't know, that's not the right word, comes, but it's also difficult. But if we choose not to lean in and live into that, you can really live a hell on earth, living parallel lives under the same roof.
Absolutely. And I think in some ways, kind of all of what we're talking about is how do we enter into those places of discomfort and the places of pain and the places where we carry wounds deep within us, you know, often from childhood. And we all have a part of us, I think, that's wounded in different ways. And when those are touched, and those are touched by these losses, but they're also touched by a long-term relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have two choices. We can either, you know, run from that or hide from that or leave that and find the next relationship that until we feel that again, and then leave that and find the next relationship until that's triggered again, you know, or the same with losses, you know, we can mask it and stay on the surface. And so much of what my book is speaking to is this desire in me. And I think it's a God-given desire that a desire to live fully alive. And so much of that is to be able to be present in what my friend Angela calls the unanswerable whys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where we need our traveling companions to say, keep going. This is not going to be answered, but, you know, keep getting up in the morning and keep taking in deep breaths. Keep finding what you love.
Yes.
Keep seeking honesty and openness with yourself and with God. Keep holding hands with others on the downhills and all of that. But part of living fully alive is certainly finding ways to exercise our grief muscles, right?
Yes.
And find ways to incorporate and to work through creatively and open up to all the ways that life hurts us so that we can be open and alive and experience all the incredible ways that life reaches us and that God reaches us and that love reaches us and that there's incredible beauty here and an incredible joy and great waves to ride and
I
want to feel that.
Well, and you know what I wanted to say, I'm going to read another quote that's in the next chapter after the one you were just talking about in your chapter Losing My Strength, but I wanted to step back and just say, you know, you mentioned losses, physical losses, and honestly, I thought it was so gentle the way you said, you know, and my husband was diagnosed with diabetes. You didn't even say type 1, and you talked about, you know, physical losses. Did you say arthritis? I don't even know what you said, but I thought, no, these were big physical losses. You were a hugely active, you know, surfer, hiker, this, that, and the other thing. It's not like you were a couch potato that these things did not affect your life. I mean, these were significant losses. And one of the things I love about Broken Hallelujahs, the themes and the thoughts are transcendent, which I always love. And that's the measure of a good book. You know, in this chapter, Loving My Strength, Losing My Strength, you're talking about your own journey with what was happening with your body. But this morning, I texted this because it spoke to me about something else in my own life. I texted this to a friend. Grieving always involves love. We can't grieve until we are able to recognize our love for what is lost. Then comes the process of learning to love what remains, as imperfect as it may be. And, you know, you were talking about deeply loving your body and some of those struggles there. And, You know, but what you're writing about transcends specific loss, and that's one of the reasons I love the book. And I also wanted you to talk about what you do at the end of every chapter, because at the end of every chapter, you send us into these wonderful spiritual practices where we can more deeply engage with what you've just talked about.
Can I one more time circle back?
Please. Yeah.
Thanks for that. It drives people crazy. But just to frame it, the greatest loss was losing my brother.
Yes.
To brain cancer. And I do want to name this because so many people are dealing, you know, dealt with different kinds of losses that we're talking about. But also in the book, I talk about fertility issues and losses of desiring children and that whole thing that actually ended well for us. But was a long, difficult journey. But with my brother, healthiest person I knew was the type that would say, "Mom, I want a bike to school," meaning Santa Cruz from Ventura, 400 miles away. And he did.
A major adventurer, right?
Total adventure. So one day he just was having headaches, had an MRI, and had a brain tumor was found. And obviously huge shock for all of us. We all live in the same town. He's married to my best friend, two young children and an older son. Went through the surgery almost immediately, and it was very successful. And then 12 days after his surgery, so it was a very successful surgery. I thought, oh God, thank you. This is a miracle. You know, and we all were being so grateful and thankful and believing it was a miracle. And then 12 days after the surgery, his brain herniated while he was in the emergency room, meaning pressure had built up, pushing his brain down on his brain stem, which is almost always, it's very, very bad. It often leads to death. In his case, they caught it early enough where it led to some brain damage, stroke kind of things. That caused us not to treat the cancer then moving forward. And so he had 5 years with us in all different kinds of states of being, some which was very much Mark present with us still, and some all sorts of behaviors that result from brain injury kinds of things. So it was really a rabbit hole we all dropped into. And just questions of, you know, God, we felt you were so present in his surgery, and yet were you absent when his brain was herniating while he was in the hospital, and nobody noticed it until it was too late. And, you know, those kind of things hit so deeply. And then this 5-year journey with Mark also coincided with my husband and I losing our business. I lost my job at Youth Specialties at that time. The company went through some massive changes. And so we were both unemployed for 2 to 3 years. And at the same time, we had these two little babies. And
that of course you had prayed for, and you know, you look at and I don't even know if this quote is in a part of the book where you're talking about this, all of this, but I underlined it. You said, "Much of what I believed about God and the world was not holding up. When this journey of unbelief began, I was deeply shaken. What does one do when they discover God is not who they thought God was?"
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the stuff you're talking about, I know there are people listening to the podcast that are going, yes, yes, I'm there. I've been there, or I am there right now. And I mean, those are scary places to be, and scary places inside us when we start questioning the whole God piece in the midst of all of that.
Yeah. And loss so often brings a crisis of faith for those of us who are believers. Mm-hmm. Because we believe that God would protect us in certain ways. We believe that God will provide for us in certain ways. And then something happens and we don't feel that God has done those things.
Is it a faulty theology we've been taught, or is it just a process we need to go through, or a bit of both?
Yeah, that's a great question. I look to the Psalms, the laments, and get the feeling that I don't think we can humanly do anything else, but this is my understanding of God. This is my understanding of who I am. I think God constantly shatters our understandings of God. Mm-hmm. Is constantly, you know, God is so beyond any understandings we could possibly have of God. And that process is painful. And I think experiences, and I'm certainly not saying that God sends us, you know, sends cancer cells in my brother's brain to to make me understand God better or a more compassionate person. That is not what I'm saying. But I think experiences do often break open our understandings of God and ourselves in a way that then God comes in. If we are able to open that up and be honest about that, then God comes in and eventually restores our understanding of who God is, and it's a greater understanding, and restores our understanding of who we are, and it's a greater understanding. And I see this cycle in the laments. You know, the people of Israel are saying, you know, God, why have you left the building? Why are you silent in my time of need? I'm abandoned. I'm in a pit. And then this, you know, raw emotion, rage, you know, kill their babies, you know, dash them in the stone or whatever.
Right.
And all these just raw emotions coming out. And, you know, their foundation, the chair has been pulled out from under them and they're flailing. And so those are really helpful templates for me on what to do when we feel that God has left the building, and how to stay present and honest and pouring out our emotions and shaking our fists towards the heavens and towards God and saying, why, where? But staying in dialogue until God does the work of healing and restoring and rebuilding trust. We can't fake it until we make it, right?
Right.
There's just no such, this is not possible to say, oh, I have faith now, or oh, I trust now, when we've been hurt by life and have felt like God has let us down.
Well, let me quote you again, as you're in this chapter, Losing My Religion. Reading the Psalms might even lead me to believe that if I don't come up against some serious loss of faith from time to time, I might be carrying around a very small God. I loved that, underlined that, along with a whole host of other things. But but I think what sometimes keeps us from addressing loss or from going to those Psalms of Lament, which I love that you wrote all about that, is this sense that, oh, nope, we've got to buck up, be strong, look good. What will others think of our faith? You know, which I think is really a poor version of faith, but I think that many go that direction because that's what we think we, quote, should do.
Yeah, the idolatry of keeping up appearances.
Way to name it. Wow.
Right?
That's good.
It's harsh, but I need to hear it that harshly.
Good. I would love for you to, I keep trying to get you to do this. You keep circling back.
Sorry.
But I do want to say this before I ask this question again. This piece about your brother is huge, a part of the story. And I guess one question before I get again to ask you what you do at the end of the chapters is to ask this. I think often we think, so I'm going to enter this grief journey. Okay, I'm on it. Oh, hallelujah. Once I finish grieving this loss, it's done, gone, never to come back again. Truth or falsehood?
Oh, you know, grief is its own thing.
Yeah,
we don't
okay.
get to control it, and I so wish we could. But how we look at that, I think, is really important. And so often we say, "Oh my gosh, this thought or this feeling, or even in terms of people we need to forgive, or you know, oh, it's here again. I'm angry again. I'm sad again." Mm. And we think, "So it wasn't any good. So I didn't really forgive, wasn't really healed from this grief, or I haven't really been tended to by God like I thought I had." And that's just false thinking. I think that's dangerous thinking, and that's false thinking, because it's very black and white, right? Very
yes. Rigid. Yes.
And instead, I think our job is to recognize that there's more that God gets to heal. There's more that God gets to tend to. There's something else that God gets to touch and rest and restore in us. And to open that up, it's a deeper level. It's a spiral, I guess, you know, versus the merry-go-round, like, oh, here I am again. Oh, here I am again. Mm-hmm. Oh, here I am again. I don't think that's possible in this world. I don't think that's reality. It's always a different place. And, you know, to quote C.S. Lewis, further up and further in,
yes.
Right? And so I'm trying to recognize that when I feel like I'm hitting at the same issue, and just recognize that no, this is the same wound that's perhaps being touched, but it needs to be touched right now. It needs to be opened and touched in a different way, Mm-hmm. And that there's expansion happening and growth happening and a deepening of my faith and who I am. And so I really believe that that's what's going on. And it's part of taking my sticky fingers off the steering wheel of life. I think Anne Lamott talks about that a lot.
Yes, yes, she does.
I so feel that image, that control, that gripping the steering wheel. And
yeah.
God is saying, no, just let me tend to what is here now. Shh, just quiet down, my child, quiet down. Mm.
And I think, you know, you mentioned something earlier about women. I think we women also are great controllers, or I mean, I think all of humanity, we all are, men and women alike, but women, I don't know, I think we're especially good at trying to control. And so to take our fingers, sticky fingers off that steering wheel is a great, great metaphor for us, especially, I think. Okay, now back to what you do at the end of chapters, because I find this, I found this very helpful and hopeful, and I'm folks listening to the podcast know that I'm also a spiritual director, and so this is something that I love that you did in the book. So talk about what you do at the end of chapters.
So I have different classic and creative prayer practices, and they are certainly written as offerings. Mm-hmm. So I want people to use them very loosely, use them if they feel an invitation to use them. But it is a way to stop and enter in more fully, I think, to our own stories. And that's the entire purpose of the book. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stories in it, but the whole intention of those stories, and I hope it's clear in my writing, is to help the reader enter into their own stories and begin to bring those stories to the surface. So the prayer practices are invitations to help us do that more. And so there's things like classic prayer practices such as breath prayer, the Jesus prayer, and I kind of explain these different things, centering prayer, writing a lament, and this kind of thing, walking the stations of the cross or praying the stations. So these things have been in our Christian history and tradition for many, many, many years. And then there's also some that are creative prayer practices like taking a bath, doing what we love, the prayer of the tantruming child, one of my favorites.
Yes, thank you.
Right? And making and breaking things. This kind of thing that also can help us open up our griefs to ourselves and to God.
That's helpful. I love that's all the way through. And you really do, it is creative, and it's a wonderful invitation as God leads us in that space. You know, one of the things, when I talk to someone like you, Beth, someone who's creative and thoughtful and an excellent writer, Broken Hallelujahs is beautifully written, all about learning to grieve the big and small losses of life. What I want to do, we've talked about, you know, the first part of the book, what it is that's been lost, and you've talked a brief bit about listening to our losses, but I'd love for you to end in this place where you go in the third part of the book, which is inviting hope, because I think sometimes we feel that we'll never get there to that part of the journey, and it might be good for you just to speak a little bit about what you write about in that portion of the book that might encourage us to keep moving on.
So inviting hope is really the section on creatively working with what we find. Mm-hmm. So talk about naming our losses, noticing our losses, so what's been lost in the first part, and then acknowledging and listening to those losses in the second part. And then the third part, inviting hope, is about finding ways to creatively work with what we've found. There's all sorts of things in there, how nature can be part of that, finding beauty, ritual, creating ritual, creative expressions, serving other people. There's all these different chapters, physicality, getting our bodies moving, how all of these things can help us, help the grief go someplace useful, go someplace transformative versus just get swallowed as, you know, we just kind of allowing the toxins of grief to get trapped, swallowing it and keeping it trapped in our body. So all these practices kind of help it move out and move through. And again, trusting that God is very present in this process, and we're responding to this presence, that our job, I think, is to be as open and honest as we can with the ways that life has hurt us with all of our experiences and how we feel about those experiences. So being open and honest to ourselves and to God and with another person is a fantastic idea too.
Yeah.
Very helpful. And I'm saying this as an introvert that never spoke to anybody until she was 20.
I love it.
But, you know, but I found that that's so, so important to keep me in this game of life, to keep me open to the fullness of life, that I need a brother or sister or a 12-step group or whatever it is to encourage me, and sometimes to hold the faith for me, and to hold what I can't hold myself at the moment. If I felt God's left the building, well, I don't have that faith in the moment, but I have a community of people, and my church is a very powerful place for me, that they say the prayers and they hold the faith for me when I can't, until whatever's been healed and I can say those prayers again. And so that's our work, I think. That's our job, and it's God's job, if you will. Mm-hmm. And God's work is to tend and to heal and to restore and to resurrect and to awaken the captives, to set the captives within us free, and the places we're blind to help us see again, and all those things that God does. And those aren't things that I can make happen.
Well, and I was just thinking, as you were saying all of that so beautifully, that, wow, I didn't read anywhere in the book where you gave an exact time frame for all of this. You know, I wish it was, wow, it's a 27-day process every time, and then you're done. No. I think that's probably what makes it difficult along the way. We don't know how it will all move forward and work out. And I also appreciate that you gave permission. I think some of us, especially those who've maybe grown up in the conservative evangelical church, we need that permission to allow someone else to kind of hold, be a placeholder for our faith in those moments, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That was such an important learning for me. And I think one of the things about grief is nobody likes to be in pain, right?
Sure.
It's a natural response
to
want to get out of pain. But what I'm trying to do is go underneath that and learn to say yes to God and all that life brings. And so in doing that, I'm trying to switch out of that mentality that says, this is what I do to get out of this pain. You know, this is the pill I take and then I'm not in pain. This is da-da-da-da-da. And instead recognizing that both the joys and the things that hurt me are part of God leading me home.
Yes.
And that what the adage, what is in the way is the way.
Yeah.
And that's a real switch for my brain. But I think it's dead on what I need to be doing to really experience the fullness of life that God has created me to experience. So it's not like as soon as I get over this hurdle of the sadness or the situation that's difficult, then I'll really start living. But no, the invitation is here in the midst. This is my journey home, whatever it is that I'm thinking is in the way. No, it is the way. It is the way home.
And I think that's a great place to end our conversation today. Again, I said we've barely scratched the surface, but I just personally have to say how beautifully written Broken Hallelujahs is. And it's one of those books that you can read little bits of and chew on and sit with. And I think, in fact, that's probably the best way to read it. And I am deeply grateful that you put this in the form of a book, and for your time with us today, Beth. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations.